What's up, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike. He's Kev. Coming up on today's show, we'll recap the Hounds' promising loss to Charleston Battery. That's right, I said promising. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is one of the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen. Out to the middle, back to Kerr.
So before we actually get into the recap of the game, there was some news that came out, I think, the day before the game started, and that is that last year's captain, Danny Earls, is now back with the team for the rest of the season. So, Kev, what are your thoughts on that? Yeah. Give us your hot take.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good in a couple different ways. We asked out on Twitter maybe a podcast or so ago about, you know, people's wishes or whatever. And a couple of them mentioned, oh, it'd be nice to see Danny Earls back. And I completely agree. I think he brings two things to the side that's much needed. One of them being a strength in defense and a kind of aggressiveness, like a true aggressiveness in defense, where that's kind of his specialty. Others maybe kind of have that a part of their game, but that really is his game. And on top of that, I mean, it's another leader in the pitch. And I think last podcast we were talking about the kind of lack of leadership. Two interesting comments come up from this signing. One of them is, does he take the captaincy back? And two, is this a Coach Brandt signing, or was this kind of already in the process? You know, it would be really interesting if Coach Brandt came in and said, okay, I've watched enough video, you know, I've identified that I want to get Earls back in the side if we can get him. And maybe that kind of information will come out in the coming weeks, but
I thought it was very interesting. Danny Earls is a we've talked about a Pittsburgh type player, and last season he is very blue collar, hard nose, does the dirty work. He took a lot of the set pieces for the team last year. He was definitely a fan favorite, so I think it's good to see him back. Whether or not he'll take the captaincy right away, I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes Kerr is almost playing with more weight on his shoulders because he does have the captaincy. I mean, that may just be what I'm perceiving from seeing him play on the field. I don't think you take it away from him and just say, hey, Earls is back, you know, pass it off. But I think that's an interesting conversation. I think the more interesting one is the point you brought up about, is this a Coach Brandt move, or is this something that's been in the works? Because the timing is sort of questionable. Now, Coach Brandt hasn't been shy about saying that he thinks that one of the biggest deficiencies that we have right now is that we're giving up too many chances on defense. And Danny Earls is a defensive midfielder. He plays right in front of, or I'm assuming he'd play right in front of Sergio Campbell and Willie Hunt. So that sort of provides more coverage on defense.
And I think with Earls coming back in the side, I mean, that also makes me wonder about Branson's position, because you would think that's kind of Branson's position to hold down. And the fact that maybe he hasn't been starting, I don't know, maybe there's not a lot of trust in Branson right now, or maybe they just feel like he needs to develop more. It just gives us another option. You know, if we're away or maybe we're ahead in a game and we want to hunker down, we can have Earls and Branson in there and kind of really solidify the defensive unit. I'm going to be really interested to see how Earls fits into a Coach Brandt side. I don't know if Coach Brandt's going to play a 4-2-3-1. If he does, Earls would fit in quite nicely into that too. But if he goes more for like a 4-4-2, 4-5-1 kind of thing, I don't know. I don't know about Earls' ability on the ball to kind of spray passes around. I mean, we'll get into it later, but I thought Vincent did a wonderful job of that, kind of dropping back, sitting in the hole, and spraying balls around. I wouldn't expect Earls to do that, but you would still want to see some competency from that position to be able to, you know, have the vision to look up and spot a pass. I think that's what Coach Brandt wants in his system. But, yeah, I don't know. When we get back to the timing issue, and it's just a really interesting situation, I thought.
And Earls isn't the only one. Team owner Tuffy Schallenberger came out on Twitter right after the Earls signing was announced and basically said, hey, there's another one coming. So now, you know, everybody's out there speculating who's the next one going to be and when's this going to happen. You know, it might have just been a tease that there's something else in the works and that it's not immediate, but it's interesting.
Well, I guess my last point on this before we get into the recap, why, I mean, I don't know if this is maybe like bad management or whatever. Why did he leave in the first place? I mean, that's kind of weird, right? I mean, it's leaving for a season. Okay, see you guys. Like, and then what, after 9-10 games? Oh, hey guys, I'm back. Like, that's I don't know. You don't, I've never really heard of that anywhere else.
Yeah, I have no idea if it was him leaving or if it was just we didn't re-sign him. That's something I'd have to go back and look into. Or if anybody knows, feel free to let us know on Twitter, Facebook, email. We'll definitely mention it and get you in the running there for a jersey at the end of the season. But yeah, Danny Earls is back, so that's something to look forward to here as we head through the season. Let's go ahead and get into the game recap. Charleston ended up winning this game 2-1. I mentioned on the last show that I had a lot going on Saturday, and I was going to say, heck with it, we're packing up the kids and we're going anyway, and that's exactly what we did. We basically went from a soccer picnic almost directly to a birthday party and went straight from the birthday party and headed down to the stadium. I apologize. There were a number of people that I recognized in the Steel Army that I wanted to stop and say hi to that were tailgating. I actually had a big box of stuff that I was bringing from our soccer association to take to our friends over at Cameroon FDP, which is a great organization. They collect used gear. They also take donations, and they take them down to kids in Cameroon who don't have shoes, who don't have jerseys, who don't have shorts, things like that. So I was sort of rushing through the parking lot, and I had all my kids chasing me behind me in the box. And so I apologize, guys. Next time I'll stop and definitely have a drink. But overall, the energy in the stadium was awesome. You know, there were players from Messiah that were there wearing their jerseys, and they were down there talking to Coach Brandt. He seemed to really appreciate that. There seemed to be a decent turnout considering that both the Pirates and the Pens were playing that night.
I think it was the highest attendance of the season so far.
It looked good.
That's what I heard. I think it was on the cast. They mentioned that.
And it's always difficult because I think whenever you're watching, you know, camera shots of the crowd, because of the position of the cameras, you can't actually see how many people are in the stadiums that run sort of parallel with the field. You're always just sort of seeing the end where the Steel Army is. And it can be deceptive because they're all on their feet and they're all up towards the front. It may look like there's not a ton of people there. It felt like there was a ton of people there. So that was really good for the home opener for Coach Brandt. You know, my wife sort of got christened into her Riverhounds. I don't know what the right word is here, but anyway, we were about three rows back from the front in midfield, and I was just telling the kids, like, okay, now you need to be weary because balls can come out of play and they can come right at you. And they're all like, okay, yeah, sure, yeah, Dad, whatever. And sure enough, you know, Mauricio Vargas and Hunter Gilstrap, who we talked about have had a few issues kicking here and there, were practicing kicks back and forth, and there was a ball that literally was bouncing up, and I put my hands out to catch it, and I was like, I got it! And then it hit the plexiglass, skipped over, and thankfully my wife was ready, and she got it instead. And I said, see, like, you're the only one this has happened to all pregame. So I was able to take it over and toss it back to Hunter, which was a cool way to start the game, and the kids thought it was awesome. But yeah, before we get into the takeaways, let's just briefly talk about the goals. Like I said, I was at the game. Of course, I was at the snack bar for both of Charleston's goals. So, you know, I was walking off and I saw they issued a PK, and I'm like, well, great, there goes that. But Kev, talk us through what happened in both of those.
Yeah, so first one, a PK, which, I mean, I don't know. I guess there have been softer PKs given, but maybe it's my bias. It didn't really look like a penalty kick. Slotted away well, I guess. But the second goal, free kick, ball bounced around the box. We didn't clear, and they put it away. Yeah, it was just frustrating to see because, you know, you mentioned in the last podcast, one of their best attacking players was out with an injury or a card. I don't know. He was out. And so immediately you're thinking, great, like this is our chance. The stars are aligning. We're in a good position to do really well here. And they get two goals from just sloppy play, set piece and penalty kick. So it was disappointing to see, and it kind of came against the run of play. I think especially for the first 30 minutes we were pretty dominant, but I think the PK was given by Jordan Morrell. Not positive on that, but I'm pretty sure. And yeah, he just made a, I think, yeah, he was trying to track back and maybe his leg clipped the other guy's leg and he fell down. Yeah. And then the second one, it was just poor defending, free kick into the box and we couldn't clear our lines. So I mean, very, very bad timing to give away those goals. Especially because we were on top and then they come right before halftime. I'm sure Coach Branch kind of has to rip up his halftime notes at that point and kind of come up with a new game plan. But yeah, it was inopportune and bad timing.
Yeah, so they got the two goals right before halftime. And then we came out in the second half and you called it. Rob Vincent got a goal. He was basically about 25 yards out, just ripped a shot that seemed to be well placed. You know, when he took it, I'm like, there's too many bodies. There's no way. And somehow it made its way through and went into that back post.
Well, and I'll say, at least watching from the stream, I was exactly the same way. Right when the ball left his foot, I was like, all right, it's not traveling far. It's not traveling fast enough and all this other stuff. But somehow it got in. So, and on the stream, it felt like 30 to 35 yards too, by the way. It was really far out.
I was just guessing when I was, it was far away.
But what was your just initial emotional reaction to that goal?
To Vincent scoring? Yeah. Well, it was funny because there was an older couple that was sitting behind me and they were like, they're sitting there talking, they were like, who was the player that we just got from DC? What's his name? And the old husband was like, it's Vincent. It's Rob Vincent. And she was like, what number is he? And he was like, he's number 11. He's up there. And I'm like, no, he's not number 11. He's number 66. And at that very moment, the ball left Rob's foot and went in the goal. And I'm thinking like, there you go. There he is. Nice. It would be him. So emotionally, yeah, I think it was, you know, we were excited because it's like, okay, now we're back in the game. But then immediately it was like, well, I'm glad that Rob got the goal. I think I'd be happier if somebody else got the goal so that when we're looking back, you know, through these games, it's like, wow, we have somebody that can score that's still on the roster. But it was exciting nonetheless. I mean, I'm sure he looked thrilled. And especially, we didn't mention, he was wearing number 66, which I think was an awesome touch and a little throwback to the Pens and Lemieux. But yeah, what did you think of?
Very mixed emotions, because obviously it's a great goal. But at the same time, yeah, it's like, okay. Well, yeah, Coach Brandt's first goal was from a player that we won't get back now. This player's gone. And yeah, it's like, well, great. It had to be him. It had to be our savior that's not our savior, that's not on our team. And yeah, so it was kind of disheartening at the same time. It's like, great, this is the only way we score is by getting Rob Vincent back on loan. So it was a little disappointing in that sense. But yeah, I mean, it was a great goal. It was good to see. It seemed like it got everyone fired up, and it definitely was game on after that. But I just couldn't finish it off, I guess.
Part of me was really hoping that after that goal, Tuffy was going to come out and tweet that the additional signing was going to be Rob Vincent. That we just got him back, and it's like, gang's back together. Here we go. Let's do this. But yeah, so, you know, Rob Vincent got our own goal. We ended up losing 2-1. We got three more Mon goals. We had some people asking on Twitter, you know, how many that was. I counted three. So we'll add that to our total for the end of the season. Let's jump into our takeaways. So Kev, the first takeaway I had as the team walked out of the tunnel was, hey, we've got consistent players in consistent positions for two games in a row. All right. So we rolled out with Vargas in goal. We had Merle, Hunt, Campbell, and Russell across the back. We had, it really seemed like we had a five-man midfield that sort of was fluid in a lot of ways, but that was Green, Okai, Kerr, Maloto, and Vincent, and then Herzog up top.
That was the second time I think I've seen that under Coach Brandt. It really does seem like, it's never a line, but it's never any kind of structured formation. Yeah, it's sometimes this guy goes, sometimes this guy goes. Sometimes, and they kind of take turns pressing and dropping, and they take turns all around the field. I think that's I'd be happy to see that. I think difficult to pull that off. But at the same time, it seems like we're getting better. And we can talk about it later. You can finish off your takeaways, but that's kind of one of my takeaways is progress looks to be made kind of, outside the fact of the result. I think players are slowly starting to get Coach Brandt's philosophy.
Oh, and it was one of those things where it seemed like they were flying out of the gate. So we got there, and we probably got in a little bit earlier than we should have, in terms of like having to sit there with three kids that were nine and under. But my youngest son, who's four, is sitting on my lap, and right before kickoff, he's going, "Can we go get nachos? Can we go get nachos? Can we go get nachos?" And we're getting ready to kick off, and I look up, and I'm like, "No, we're not going to get nachos," because immediately the way they were lined up, you could tell. So the Hounds got the kickoff, and basically you had two guys in the middle, one to touch the ball to, and everybody else, it felt like everybody else was up on the line, ready to just run at their team. And I think we had three or four guys behind the guys kicking the ball or taking the kickoff. But on our side, you had Drew Russell, you had Stephen Okai, and you had somebody else. So basically I knew from out the gate, they were going for a goal. And it was even at the point where as they were lining up, Coach Brandt is yelling at them, like he's telling Russell get closer to the touch line. He was telling Okai to come closer. And it was a set play. And I was like, we ain't going anywhere because this is about to get exciting.
So that's another thing I wanted to ask you. You kind of mentioned your seating position to me off air. And mm-hmm. you said you were very close to Coach Brandt. And yeah. So, yeah, what was it like? I mean, what was he like? What was he kind of, you know, was he pacing up and down the touchline? You know, how often was he yelling out instructions? You know, what kind of happened? What'd you hear?
Yeah, I mean, there were times it was really cool because most of the times, you know, when we watch a game, if we're watching it online, you have to focus on whatever the camera's pointing at. And in this case, we were close enough to midfield that any conversation that Coach Brandt was having with the players or with Coach Kadick, we were sort of front and center for that. And so a lot of times I found myself almost watching them more than I was watching the game, just to sort of see, you know, what are they doing? What's going on? And he was very vocal at times. There were specific things that you could tell that they were trying to do, and he was trying to reinforce this with the team. You know, every time we'd lose the ball, he'd immediately be shouting, "Win it back, win it back, win it back." And you would see guys sprinting after the ball in our final third. You know, basically, if we lose a ball, you see Corey just take off trying to win it back and get the ball back and get back in transition. A lot of times what they were trying to do too, and he was yelling this out a lot more at the beginning of the game than at the end of the game, you can tell one of the things that they like to do is get the fullbacks out wide and up high. So most of the time you had Russell and Morrell sort of sneaking up the sidelines and getting wide open, and then we either do a long cross to them or we play a quick ball and let them run to it. And then once they get it deep, they have two options. They can either, well, actually have three options. They can either look up and cross, or they always have somebody that drops in underneath them. So at the first half of the game, Drew Russell was running up the side, and Okai would slide in underneath him. So he could either drop it back to Okai, who could then either look up or cross or play something short in the middle, or they could take on the defender. And this was something we saw over and over and over again in this game. And what that allowed us to do was to get players up into our final third and stay there, which was awesome.
It's nice to have those options, but at least for me, that was one of the main things that kind of stayed in my mind after this game was, yeah, we do a really good job getting our fullbacks high and getting the ball wide. But too often, it seemed like our only way of going forward was, okay, pass it around a bit, slip it out to the fullback, and then just whip in across. I mean, there were a lot of I would have loved to go back and actually just count the number of crosses that went in and count the number of crosses that we actually connected with, because it didn't seem like a lot. I mean, there were multiple times where at least two or three times where the cross wasn't even anywhere like near the guy, and you could tell it was just I'm getting in there, I'm just gonna whip it in, and that's obviously not what you want to see. But
I think part of that is still learning the system, though. I think that Coach Brandt is saying, put the cross in, and whoever's putting the cross in, be it, you know, Rel, be it Russell, they're expecting somebody to be there, but the communication isn't there as to who it is that's supposed to be there. So we're still trying to work that out. There was lots of shouts of play football, like when we would get the ball to calm them down, he was play football, play it smart, play it quick, play it fast, have fun. And there was a lot of direction on sets plays.
Did he say football or soccer?
He said football. Ooh. He said football. So I should have asked him, you know, when he was on the show, if it's football or soccer. But there was lots of play football. But no, watching him he's so high energy, and he's so much fun to watch. It's just as fun watching him get into the game as it is to watch the game itself. But I thought, you know, especially for the first half, the first 5 minutes, I'm sitting there watching it. I'm going, is this the same team? Like, they looked so much better. I don't think Charleston touched the ball. And I'm like, this is going to be an amazing game. And I thought the interesting thing, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because I think that my view is somewhat skewed, because I'm used to sitting and watching the game with an analytical eye through the lens of the camera. This was much more like, hey, my family's here. I'm just sort of here to enjoy it, and I'm going to take mental notes as I go. For that first half, Rob Vincent was involved in the game, but I felt like we were playing in such a way that he wasn't as big an impact as he was in the second half, when guys seemed to, I don't want to say we tired out, but we seemed to lose focus just a little bit, and that's when Rob seemed to step up and shine. But for that first 15 to 20 minutes, he was involved in getting the ball and moving things around, but I almost felt like the way we were playing, we could have plugged somebody else in there and we'd been just as effective.
I would kind of disagree with you on that one. Okay. In the second half, I agree. I think, I don't know if it was, okay, crap, we're two goals down, we need to get a goal. And it did seem like Vincent was playing higher up the pitch. In the first half, he was very deep. But I'll say that watching it on the stream, I mean, he was what made us tick. And so when I saw him that deep, I thought, okay, this is an obvious move from Coach Brandt, not wanting to rely on him so much, but still getting him on the pitch. So he was going to be the guy that drops deep and kind of gets the attack going and not necessarily finishes anything off. We'll leave the team to do that. And he wasn't even necessarily like one of those midfield players pressing high. He was really deep. But that being said, I mean, honestly, him in that position, I wrote it down. I said he looked head and shoulders above everyone else on the pitch.
Yes.
And it was because of the small things that he did. It was his first touch put him in a great position to give him a bit more time, allow him to pick his head up and pick a pass. His first touch was so much better than everyone else on the field. His movement, his passing was sharp and crisp and allowed the other Riverhound player to kind of continue their movement rather than having to stop and trap the ball and then keep going. His distribution was great. I mean, he was able, at least for me, to shine above everyone else just by doing small things really well. And that's, I want to see a bit of that back into the team, just doing the basics really well. I mean, and so I don't know, that was kind of my assessment on Vincent. I don't know if you have anything else you want to talk about around him, but getting down to like the first touch passing thing, I did write down, I've written down in my notes, you know, passing better but not great and movement better, mm-hmm, but not great. And regardless, these are still good signs that we're progressing in both of these. And it really seemed like everyone, and I don't think we saw this at the beginning of the season, everyone was taking one touch and then distributing the ball. It was, yep, no one was really taking one, two, three touches and then trying to like beat a man in midfield, where you really shouldn't be trying to do that. I mean, you need to be a very skilled technical player to try to beat a man in midfield in the center of the pitch. Yeah, it seemed like we were taking one touch and getting rid of the ball. And you can only do that, A, when your first touch is good, your passing's good, but more importantly, you actually have options around you. And so it seemed like our players were getting in very good positions. You mentioned, you know, when fullbacks would go up, we would make sure we would have someone coming underneath every time to allow them that option of kind of dropping it back if nothing's on. That's huge. And so that was honestly probably the biggest positive in the entire game for me, and I think we saw it more in the first half. I don't know if we got maybe deflated in the second half and that kind of dropped off, but I'm really pleased with that kind of style of play of what we saw, especially in the first half.
Well, and it seemed like in the second half we were still trying to do the same thing and swing it out wide, but a lot of times the balls, the crosses were either just off or the fullbacks were either tired and they weren't getting to the ball. I think this system, you know, Coach Brandt saying it's going to be an entertaining style, it's going to be a high press style. Yes, it's going to be both of those, but that's not something you can just throw a switch and start playing. Like, that takes conditioning, that takes training, and I think the fact that we've seen it is awesome. Like, I have so much more hope now for the remainder of the season after seeing this game, but I'm also not, because of that hope, I'm not overly disappointed about the loss. I know this is going to be a process, but yeah, I think that's what happened.
You mentioned the fullbacks there. We saw, I think, earlier on, I mean, we talked with Hunter in the interview about kind of formations and modern style of play and fullbacks getting high up the pitch. I saw that more than any game so far this season in this game with the fullbacks getting high. And I think you mentioned the kind of fullbacks maybe tiring at the end of the game. When you put so much emphasis on getting your fullbacks high and having them be your width and having them swing in balls, that they can, they're physically on, like, on the periphery of the pitch, but it's one of the most demanding positions because of how much running they have to do. I mean, because they need to be the outlet going forward, and they also need to get back in defense. So, I mean, that's not surprising. I think there was more of an emphasis placed on that, I think, in the past two games under Coach Brandt, where maybe there was less so with Coach Stevens. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next game, the next two games, we're still seeing our fullbacks maybe tire on the 50th or 60th minute. But hopefully their conditioning increases, you know, over the season, and that becomes less of a problem. But I definitely notice that, and yeah, they're gonna, yeah, it's a demanding position when we play this way, and hopefully we can cope with it going forward. But
and it's a different skill set. I mean, it's a different set of expectations than what they've had for the first part of the season. So they're going to have to adapt to that. But yeah, you basically have Drew Russell and Jordan Morrell sprinting the length of the field back and forth and back and forth. And I mean, they're going to tire out. So, that was one of the other takeaways. I guess a few other takeaways. This game very easily could have been, 5-2, in my opinion. Corey Herzog keeps getting chances, and you could tell I don't want to say there's a lack of confidence, but Coach Brandt acknowledged as such after the game that this happens in every sport where players go through either mental slumps or just slumps in general, and the only way through it is to work through it. And he's confident, I think everybody's confident, that once Corey gets that first one, it's just going to open up the floodgates and they're going to come. But there were a number of times that, I mean, he had the first shot was basically a cheeky little flick from Vincent, which was beautiful. And Corey was sort of falling backwards and he hit it right at the goalie. He ended up getting a breakaway where his jersey was tugged on, but that really shouldn't have affected the shot. I mean, let's be honest.
I think it affected it, but I think at least some of the announcers were calling for a potential penalty shout. I think that was a bit light. We could have potentially seen it given in other cases. I think if Herzog maybe would have sold it more, maybe then it might have been a pen, but it seemed pretty light. So I think it would have affected his shot, but not a significant amount.
Yeah, and then there was another shot later in the game where he sort of teed up probably 20 yards out. The ball was bouncing, and he tried to rip it, and it just went wide right. I think, when his foot connected with it, I was like, we got a shot. And then we saw it leave, and you could tell as soon as it left his foot, he was like, crap.
There was another one. It might have been when you were getting the nachos or something, but he had a free header. It was almost exactly the same as the last game. Someone put a cross, and he had a free header at the back post, and I think he just couldn't get enough power behind it or something like that, and it was right at the goalie. I put down in my notes, dominating without being ruthless, and I think that's a big that's a big thing for this team is just being ruthless now. When you're on top, scoring the goal, and when you're when you let in one goal, have a big next five and make sure they don't get a second goal, especially immediately after it. So yeah, ruthlessness is something. excuse me. Ruthlessness is something that I think I see in Coach Brandt. So maybe we can see that being rubbed off on the players sometime soon.
Yeah, I feel for Corey. You could tell he's trying. He's all over the field and he's making other plays. So now he just needs to get that finishing touch.
Yeah, he's doing everything but scoring. I mean, that's a big thing for your main striker. They need to put the ball in the back of the net, but at least he's putting out in every other area of the pitch. He's hustling, he's closing people down, and, he's dropping deep sometimes to pick up the ball and spray it out wide. So, yeah, I think he's literally doing everything but scoring, and hopefully when that first goal comes, yeah, they all come.
Yeah, and there was a few other guys that I thought sometimes we were playing a little too cheeky. Maybe it was where I was sitting, But there were a number of times when we would take the ball into the corner, especially in the second half, when we would take the ball into the corner and we would drop it back and then work it into the middle. I sort of had this view, like, right up the pipeline, where most of the time I was right behind the guy who got the ball in the drop back, and I could see his view from there to the net. And it seemed like they had clear chances where there's nobody in front of them, but their first instinct is, well, I'm about 20 yards out, let me try to find a pass. And there were a few times that Maloto got the ball and he turned, and I'm thinking, here comes a Maloto moment. Like, he's just gonna hit it and he's gonna curl it into goal. And every time he sort of lifted up his head and he looked for the pass again. And I don't know if that's something just in the style of play, but I thought there were a few other guys that might have had opportunities, and it wasn't clicking. But again, I feel like it's coming. Like, we're close. We're really close, as Coach Brandt said.
So, staying on the topic of the midfielders, I don't know. I think maybe something that's starting to worry me a bit is I think we have too many players that go hiding in the game. I think players like Green and Okai, I don't know. They didn't have enough moments, I think, for me throughout the game where, you know, I can't remember back and think of, like, I can't remember back and think of a moment that either Green and Okai were on the ball and did something, you know, either smart with, or they're smart players, they did smart things across the match. I'm trying to remember, like, a very aha moment, and I can't think of anything from them from that. So I don't know, I'm a little worried that some of our midfielders maybe just go hiding a bit too much, and maybe, I don't want to say do the safe thing too much, but yeah, I don't know if we just need a little stardust in the midfield, and Maloto can obviously offer that in patches, but at least at this point, his match fitness isn't such that he can do that in a week in, week out basis. But I don't know. What are your other thoughts on the kind of midfield performance?
No, I mean, I thought it seemed like, especially early on, Green was dropping back and sort of being that outlet for the defense. And I thought he did that well. I wasn't too upset by that. And I felt that it seems like, even though we're playing sort of this fluid midfield, everybody still has very distinct roles. You know, like I said, if Drew Russell is up high and he gets the ball in the corner, it's Stephen Okai who's there to get the ball, to get the drop back. So they're all over the place, but they still have these very set conditional places where they need to be. So I don't know if I would necessarily fault them for that. I think the only thing that I would say about midfield was I felt that if something was going to happen in the last 30 minutes, I felt that Maloto was warming up and it was going to happen with Maloto. And so I was somewhat surprised when they took him out and put in Dwayne Ewart instead. I shouldn't say surprised. I was a bit disappointed. But it may come back to what you said about, you know, maybe Maloto isn't fully match fit yet and just trying to get back into things. And again, it's a new system. It's a demanding new style of play, and players are going to have to get used to it.
And so the last area that Petra, I want to ask you about is, what did you think about the defensive unit? There's a little bit of a theme here. We went Herzog, midfield, now we're going Eisenach. I just wanted to pick your brain.
So here's the thing. I mean, I'm torn because it's come out a lot in the media recently, and Coach Brandt has said it as much, that they think that defense is our weak spot here, and that the fact that we haven't gotten a clean sheet yet this season is a problem. And while I agree that that not getting a clean sheet is a problem, I don't know if I would necessarily say that the defense is fully to blame for that. I mean, defense starts with your forward. I mean, that's all there is to it. So you can't necessarily put all of the blame on the four guys in the back, especially when two of those guys are now basically playing forward. So now you have, you know, Sergio Campbell and Willie Hunt in the back that are trying to cover for everybody while, you know, while the midfield's trying to slide back. So that leaves you playing sort of a scramble style defense. Now, I wasn't there to see what happened on the set piece, but I thought from the run of play, I thought that both Campbell and Hunt, they were winning a ton of headers from balls that were played over the top, and I thought they did a decent job of snuffing out the attack. So I don't necessarily agree with the criticism that the defense is to blame. I feel like that's the scapegoat. Like, we're losing games because we're giving up goals, so let's point the finger at the defense. No, we're losing games because we can't score goals and we don't have help for our defense. If, you know, they're put out on an island, you can only expect them to do well so often.
Pretty much said everything I was going to say. I considered even just saying yep and moving on to the next thing. But no, I completely agree. I thought once again, Campbell and Hunt were nearly imperious. I thought Vargas actually had a really good save at one point. I forget what it was. But he
kept it in play too. Like the ball was played over the top, and he jumped up and he could have punched it over the bar. He could have just swatted at it. But what he really did was, okay, so the I forget who the player was. He was about 20 yards out, and he took a shot to basically try to place it in the top corner. So like to Vargas's right, and Vargas jumped up and he almost like cupped his hand over the ball and threw it towards the corner, keeping it in play, because at that point we were sort of running out of time and we really need to make something happen. So rather than knocking it out of play and stopping play, he kept the ball in play and threw it to the corner so that one of our defenders could pick it up and get the play going again, which I thought was not only an amazing save, but it was a really smart move on his part. It was like, you know, next level thinking for a goalie, which is impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that was interesting to hear. I didn't see that, how he kind of cupped it in the corner. That was pretty cool. Campbell and Hunt and Vargas, I think, actually all had fairly decent games. And they didn't look like scoring from the run of play. The only way they were going to score was on set pieces and something like that. But yeah, I mean, I completely said so many times, thinking back to the goals that we've let in, it really has felt like it was just our back four versus like them. And that should never be the case. It should be, you know, our back four plus, you know, at least two other midfielders back in there and putting pressure and getting blocks and everything like that. Too often, our center backs are having to, like, make the blocks themselves. I mean, you want to see your midfielders getting in there, putting pressure, sticking a leg out and getting a block in and picking up in transition. Yeah, no, I think there has to be a lot of responsibility placed on the midfield for bolstering that defense, because it's no top team anywhere just defends with four players. I mean, yeah, like you said, it starts from your striker and everyone needs to be involved with the defending, and I just don't see that right now. And yeah, I think blaming it on the back four is, I don't know, bad and irresponsible, because I think Campbell and Hunt are probably one of our best players so far this season.
And I mean, that's something that we're going to talk about, you know, in our next show. You know, we're going to have a guest on here, a special guest, and we're going to basically go through a one-third season recap. One of the things we're going to bring up is, you know, who are our players so far, or who have been our best players so far. And, you know, I think there is an argument for Willie Hunt and Sergio Campbell to be those players. Even on the PK, where, you know, I didn't see it, but from what I've read, Jordan Morrell came back and sort of pulled the guy down, but it wasn't necessary because Hunt had gotten himself into a position to stop the ball anyway. So even when we're scrambling, they're still getting themselves in a position. Now, obviously, at the end of the game, I felt it was a terrible call. Sergio Campbell gets a red card in basically the 90th minute. You know, watching the...
ever a terrible call? Jeez.
What? Wait, I'm sorry, what?
I said, what was it ever a terrible call? I said, geez.
Yeah, and again, you know, this is something else where the media was like, he pulled him down. In the run of play, I'm looking at it, and I said, Campbell had the inside track on the ball. Like, he had the ball, and the guy reached around him and then fell over. And then even on the replay, I saw it. I'm like, how is that a straight red? And even, you know, my 9-year-old is like going berserk. He's like, I'm going to find the ref and I'm going to sue him. And I'm like, well, that's not really how it works. But yes, it's okay to be upset at the ref for that. I mean, I don't think the refs had a very good game. But now Campbell has to sit out a game. He didn't really contest it at all. But to me, it was what? Like,
it would have been a harsh decision with a yellow, let alone a red. Yes. I mean, and really, yes. I think the reason why the ref was thinking maybe it's a red is because at one point Campbell had his hands around the other guy's like face. And so, but he didn't, at least on the stream, it didn't look like he actually like pushed his head or face out of the way. Right. It was kind of like his hands were trying to like get around them and kind of like just natural. I mean, look, especially on defense, there's tugging and pulling. That's legal. Like, that's fine. But there's a line that obviously you can't cross. But you need to be physical on defense. And all it was Campbell trying to be physical, trying to get his body in front of the ball and try to win the ball back. And it wasn't even a foul, let alone a red card. I mean, it was, yeah, it's nuts. And it was a shame that it came so late in the game. And now, yeah, he's going to have to miss the next game. I haven't seen any other center backs play for us. I don't know what's going to happen.
The game against TFC 2 where I don't think Campbell played. I think we had Karsten Smith in. Or we've tried different combinations of players back there at times. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the only time you give a red card in that situation is if the defender is A, the last defender back, and B, they've denied an obvious scoring opportunity. And I don't know if that was either. I think that.
Well, yeah, I think he was the last. I think he was the last defender back. But
if the guy beats Campbell, then Campbell was the only one between him and the goal, but Willie Hunt was tracking back at the same time. He was sort of parallel with them. But yeah, the bigger point to me is an obvious goal scoring opportunity, which it was not. And so, yeah, it's...
Yeah, it wasn't like... You've seen it before. You've seen defenders make cynical fouls where they're pretty much clean on through. The attacker has a step on the defender, and the defender just yanks his jersey and he's down. It looked like this guy did not have a step on Campbell. It looked like Campbell was at least with him with pace, if not getting to the ball before he did. Yeah, it just, yeah, I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. It was a very bad call.
Well, I mean, I think to a certain extent we've sort of beaten this game to death. Did you have any other takeaways you wanted to bring up at this point?
None in particular. No, I think we
I think if you haven't seen this game, we've just described it for you almost play by play. So we apologize for that. Just some of the things were definitely worth talking about. So our next show, as I mentioned, it's going to be midweek. It'll be our 1/3 season recap. We're also going to preview next week's game against the Richmond Kickers. That game will be in Richmond. Interesting thing enough, you know, we'll go back and we'll watch, you know, Richmond's most recent game. Coach Brandt has already coached against Richmond. He mentioned it that, you know, he basically took Navy and coached against Richmond. So he'll have sort of an inside track as to how they play and what goes on. So that'll be good to sort of see if that plays out on the field. I think overall, you know, 10 league games so far. We still got 20 left. We're only 1/3 of the way through the season. It feels like we've been on this roller coaster of just emotions up and down and left and right and sideways. And I think that the important thing is that, yes, we got a loss in this game, but it feels like we're starting to find a groove and we're starting to see fruits of what this may become. And I think if nothing else, I don't want to say start looking to next season because I think that's way too far off. There's still 20 games. You know, as Coach Brandt said, there's still 60 points to play for. But at the same time, I think I'm excited to see more of what this team could become, because if we've seen shades of it at this game, it's exciting and it's fun. And like I said, we took my kids to go see AC Milan play Man City when they were in town, and the kids almost fell asleep because they were so bored. For the first 30 minutes and the last 15 minutes of this game, they were on their feet, eyes glued and thrilled because of the style of play we were playing. So I think that speaks loads, if you know my kids, that speaks loads to how entertaining and how much fun this could be. So I'm excited about what's to come for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I know. Anything else? My only thing I'll say before we wrap it all up is, you know, you said 10 games in and 1/3 left this season, you know, not thinking about next season yet. I'll just say I'm not as optimistic as you are. I'll just say that. And then we'll get into, I think, all of this in the midweek podcast. But, okay. I mean, it's, you know, 1/3 is... In my opinion, it's a substantial portion of the season, and
I agree.
And so, yeah. But you're right. But I agree with you on the sense of I think we're seeing, quote unquote, you know, better soccer being played. So,
yes. How about we do this, Kev? Just for you, I will run some numbers. This will be a little teaser. I will run some numbers going into the next show, and we'll run through some scenarios. I'm not sitting here saying we are going to, you know, here we come, world. We're winning it all this year. That's not me. And I'm doing my little like, hey, like fist pump sort of while I'm doing this. No, but I'm still optimistic about watching entertaining soccer and winning a few games in the stretch and sort of seeing what happens. So, yeah. All right. We've talked enough here, Kev. Let's get out of here. Anything else from your end?
I agree. Let's finish this up.
All right. So, for Kev, I am Mike. We will talk to you very, very soon. Keep an ear out for our midweek show. Like I mentioned, special guest, We'll go ahead and drop it. Josh, our friend from the Steel Army, is going to be joining us for the entire show, top to bottom. So keep an ear out for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, we will talk to you all very, very soon.
Cheers.